Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Very good. Just earlier today, there was a memorandum, an agreement signed by three countries, Russia, Turkey, and Iran, which is significant. And I believe they were meeting in Kazakhstan.
Yes.
Of all places, but it's in the neighborhood over there. And, you know, the agreement is that they've agreed to set up some safe zones, which hopefully, you know, it'll de-escalate the war and less killing and this six-year war, especially since, you know, we declared Assad had to go. So it looks encouraging to some degree, but of course it's just getting started. They made the announcement, and the agreement basically is setting up four safe zones and agreements that it will be patrolled by these three countries, and it does raise some questions. It also points out that on five attempts by the United Nations since January this year to try to devise a ceasefire, they all failed. So it makes a point that maybe the people who have more at their interest, the local people, the Russians who are very much involved as an ally with Syria, as well as the Turks are in the neighborhood, as well as Iran. So they've had this agreement. And they call it a safe zone, but Hillary was all for this, and a lot of people made fun of her. We even expressed danger. She called it a no-fly zone, but we would set it up. And the big question is, who gets the position? Who gets the advantages? So obviously, this is not Hillary's plan. I think there's some very distinct differences between these two ideas.
Yeah, I think so. And I think a key difference has to do with the rebels. You know, the U.S. has maintained for a number of years that there is a group of moderate rebels who are poised to take over Syria once Assad is overthrown. They'll run it as a democracy. They're not Islamists, or they're moderate Islamists. And then there are terrorists such as Al-Qaeda, who is supposedly our sworn enemy, and ISIS. And our fight in Syria, the justification that President Obama used is we've got to go after ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So the U.S. has maintained that these are two very separate groups, whereas the Russians, the Syrians, people like Tulsi Gabbard, who happened to go there and look for herself, she said that they're hopelessly intermingled, that there are no moderates. So what this agreement, I think, essentially does, first of all, it requires the separation of UN-designated terrorist groups from moderate rebels. Once that is accomplished, as I understand it, then these safe zones, these four safe zones or de-escalation zones, are set up with checkpoints, are patrolled. The Russians and the Syrians agree not to overfly and bombing these areas. And from then on, that will provide for humanitarian aid to be delivered to these areas, et cetera, et cetera. But the predicating factor is the separation of the extremists, the terrorists, from the so-called moderates. And I think that's the big difference between the Hillary plan and what appears to be taking place here today.
Well, it's interesting how the ducks are lining up here, because we should have no surprise that the Iranians and the Russians are working together with Assad. But the Turks, you know, I think it was the Turks that shot down a Russian plane, you know, not too long ago, and they were at odds, and all of a sudden they're talking to each other. And I don't think the Turks have any love for Assad. They probably haven't changed their long-term position, but it's obvious for the short-term position, they're not shouting and demanding, we do nothing until Assad is gone. So therefore, they are working within this group in order to move in a direction. So it's interesting that you have those two factions, which probably is a good idea if you can get the two of them who had different policies. But United States policy, that is the biggest challenge. I mean, the Turks have other things involved. It might be the motivation there is this might give them their best chance to keep an eye on the Kurds, you know, and the Kurds would be involved there. But U.S. position, I mean, when I get asked about this on some of the interviews, what is the position? Can I criticize the position? It's a job to figure it out because, of course, it's been on again, off again. It was pro-Russia, then Russia was bad people. Then all of a sudden now we took off some sanctions, and all of a sudden Trump is talking to Putin. And it's interesting that it looks like, you know, geopolitically, the Russians are coming out way ahead on this, which I don't think is necessarily bad, because it looks like Trump is going along with this. And I think that is good. And it means that there's less chance of us getting more in depth with this problem, but time will only tell. But I think it's interesting that our policy once again has changed, and I hope we keep moving in this direction. But it will be a challenge to see what happens here. And of course, this is just hours old.
Yeah.
You know, this
breaking
agreement.
News. Yeah. On the show, you know, you mentioned ducks in a row, and I think that's an apt phrase because what's happened over the past few days, I think, has been very important, which is that Putin has really pursued some semi-behind-the-scenes diplomacy. He called President Trump. They had a phone call. Putin brought up the issue of safe zones. He said, this is probably going to come up at the meeting in Astana in a couple of days. How do you feel about it? Trump said, sounds great. You know, let's go ahead. And then he had Angela Merkel, the chancellor, German chancellor, down to Sochi in southern Russia for a meeting. You know, the ice didn't melt between them, let's put it that way. But he essentially laid the law down to her. This is what's going to happen. You wanted safe zones, we're going to have safe zones. This is coming down. And then the next day, boom, you have these safe zones. So it's interesting the way he pursued this diplomacy before the agreement.
You know, it's interesting to think about how are the neocons going to react. You know, last week when the administration decided we have to hit the Iranians with more sanctions and backed off a little bit on Russia, and even some of the neocons, it's good. Let's go after those Iranians, but don't give up on the Russians. We got to keep fighting the Russians. And I think your friend from Florida, that senator,
little Marco,
he was very disturbed. But they are not going to be happy with this. They're terrified about peace breaking out. You know, they need more activity. And if they have to keep things going, you know, if it's not in Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, these things have to continue. And, of course, North Korea, we have to stay on our toes there. The North Koreans are coming. The North Koreans are coming. So this whole thing will be interesting. Today, I imagine we'll find out what the neocons are saying about this horrible, horrible agreement of a ceasefire.
You know, it's interesting. You know, our show today is so fresh that I couldn't even find a neocon quote. I was looking for it before we started the show. I looked up, you know, the usual suspects. No one has had a chance to digest this yet.
I have a reason for that. They're trying to figure out how to vote on Obamacare.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That's what's going on.
So it's, you know, it is a shift. It's a change. The other thing I think is there's a slight lesson about non-interventionism in this as well, because, you know, the at least the Iranians and the Russians are there at the invitation of Syrians. And so they're able to craft together this agreement that may or may not work, but, it, you know, it certainly is seems to be a step in the right direction. The U.S. is not involved legally in Syria. It was not invited. It's, you know, an occupying force or an invading force. And look at the news. We talked about it this morning. What's the U.S. doing while they're setting up these zones? The U.S. is got its military vehicles monitoring the border between Syria and Turkey to keep its Turkish allies from killing its Kurdish allies.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, some questions that I don't think has been ironed out, they've talked about, generally speaking, but how are they going to handle the flights? Who gets to fly over? Will there be flights allowed? What are the potential chance of another plane or two getting shot down? You know, there's always the danger of false flags and something done deliberately. And then also these zones have to have security forces. And the security forces, I think it is just as well that these countries that have the agreement, Russia, Iran, and Turkey, will have the security, you know, protecting the security in these zones. But that can be pretty crucial. And there will be, no matter how much this looks like a possibility of a de-escalation, there are some including some people in our own government that can't stand the idea of de-escalation. And you know, the real radicals, they may all be radicals, but some are more radical than others. The ones that are determined, they can always place the bombs in the places where a lot of people get killed. So there's still a lot of danger in this. But I would have to say that this is at least a step in the right direction, doing the things that possibly could help this whole area de-escalate, at the same time not escalating, you know, our involvement. That doesn't mean we're going to sit back. I mean, if we are busy keeping our two allies from killing each other, you know, that might keep them busy for a while. But also, this whole thing is once again a reflection of the overall strategic policy, and then the policy of interventionism and involvement in places where we don't need to be involved.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the key issue here is, in a sense, this calls the bluff of not so much the Trump administration, because they haven't been that enthusiastic about the moderate rebels, you know, we have to say, thus far. But it certainly calls the bluff of people in Washington in general, the experts who say that there are moderates there, we've got to support them, you know, and Russia had been saying all along, well, you've got to separate them from Al-Qaeda. This goes without saying. And they've said, well, it's difficult. They fight together, you know, they share, you know, stuff, including our weapons and this sort of thing. This sort of calls the bluff. Okay, we can have a de-escalation zone, but you've got to get these groups that are recognized by everyone as terrorists. They can't be part of this deal. And so I think the sort of the onus is maybe even on the U.S. to say whether these can be separated.
Yeah, and there's so much, if you look for the problems, then you look into, well, what was the ulterior motive behind this? Was it, were the people who were annoyed with Assad really seeking peace and prosperity and libertarian thinking? No, that's not true. It had to do with internationalism, or at least in that region, of the battles that have been going on for a long time. The battle between the Saudis and the Iranians, you know, the Sunnis versus the Shia, and then us messing the whole thing up by causing so much trouble in Iraq. And the pipelines and oil still is a big issue there. And I think that those problems still exist. And the biggest problem that people can't accept is self-determination, especially if the self-determination means it takes away some of the ruthless authority of the outsiders who want to run the show. And then they say, hey, you can't do that. That's going to ruin our plans. But you just think of many years they have talked about, you know, even the beginning of this century, there was big talk about before we went into Afghanistan. It had to do with oil pipelines and the shenanigans that were going on, you know, with getting a pipeline through Afghanistan. So they go on year after year after year about trying strategically to get control, never thinking that maybe you could get control by just flat out talking to people. You know, it's back to this whole story about what I point out about, you know, Vietnam. What couldn't be accomplished by war can be modestly accomplished through peace, you know, and talking to people and trading with people. But there seems like up until now, there's been very little motivation. But that's generally, I think, what happens. The warring forces in these prolonged wars, they finally just get worn out, and they lose too many people. What is it, like 400,000 people have been killed in Syria? And they aren't, and then they're always saying, oh, well, they were all the militants, the military. Oh, no, not too much collateral damage. To me, if you're fighting to defend your homeland and you have become radicalized because a lot of foreign nations have been involved, it's really hard to distinguish them from, you know, being somebody who is a bystander and somebody trying to defend his own home and his family. But it is a tragedy. There's no doubt about that. Anybody has any concern to look at the human tragedy of a place like that. I mean, we've looked at the others, but this is getting to be one of the top places. Of course, I think we're still way ahead on the number of people that were killed in Iraq, you know, over those 2 decades that we've been involved. There's a lot of bombs been dropped there. And maybe, you know, I've always argued that this ends when we run out of money. Mm-hmm. You heard the other day we were running out of bombs. Okay. You know, our drones had to slow up. Maybe that's why we couldn't be so aggressive. We have to rebuild, rebuild the military. Maybe they have something to this. If you exhaust the military by fighting useless, no-win wars, I guess you can exhaust and waste a lot of weapons. But of course, that's insanity too, because it has nothing to do with defending our country.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's the astonishing hubris of the neocons and the experts in Washington. You know, back in 2011, I mean, starting in 08 probably, but it's certainly 2011 when the Arab Spring blew up. You know, there's this idea that we could remake the Middle East, you know, that we could remake it in our image. And it's caused nothing but death and destruction and misery, yeah. You know, as it would be if the Chinese tried to remake our society in their image, you know. And it's unfortunately they still haven't learned their lessons, and Americans still aren't holding their feet to the fire.
Since this is a relatively new issue that just popped up, and a lot of news will come out, what do you think can happen in the next few days? Do you think that we'll continue to see some improvement there? Are we going to cross our fingers? Just how do you look at it right now?
Well, I guess at the end, I would say this is supposed to be starting to be implemented on the 6th, which is in 2 days. I mean, this is immediate. I think there's a risk of internationalizing the problem if you get a bunch of foreign troops in there. I like the idea that the U.S. is not involved. I hope they stay not involved, because I don't think we have any business being over there. It's not that I cheer what the Russians and Iranians are doing, but I wish for us, for my country, to be out of it. And so let's hope that's what happens at the end.
Boy, I certainly agree with that. And I want to thank our audience for joining us today. And this, to us, is a very important issue. Once again, it's something that continues to develop and evolve, and sorting all the factions out in Syria is a job and a half. But the least we're involved, the better off we would all be. And I think the people who are local should solve this problem. And I mentioned earlier that we have a country like Turkey who's not exactly in the pockets of the Russians, are talking with each other and have come up with a proposal of de-escalation and having, you know, safe zones. So I would say that is very good that the people there have decided to talk with each other. And once again, I sort of like what I've heard in the last several days coming from our administration on being less militant, not dropping bombs on anybody else and not putting more sanctions on Russians. But then again, they're more, the same group, the neocons, want a lot more sanctions on the Iranians. So anyway, I think this is a move in the right directions. It's a token baby step, but let's hope that they come up with a good common sense that this is the right way to go, and that if we continue with this and support it, that means we should start withdrawing. We shouldn't have troops over there, and we shouldn't be bombing anybody. We should just de-escalate ourselves from that region, and a lot of people would be very pleased with that. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.